Okay, so yes, there's a test on Thursday. I'm going to email you my summary of those topics from days 10 through 19. Just like I emailed you a summary last time. By the way, what did y'all think of the summary I emailed for the first 9 days? Is that any good or? Too short. If there's something that I can go over you in more detail, you either come to my office hours or make an appointment for a different time, or just ask me a question over email, and we'll make sure we address it. Try and address anything that's still an issue for you before the Thursday test. Okay. I know that sometimes, you know, maybe your friend or your tutor can't explain it to you, but I think I can. You just have to find the time to be able to answer your question over email or in person. Sometimes the 50 minutes goes by too fast, but that's why I have things like office hours. So what else is going on? Okay, so today I need to come back to the chain rule because it was just too ambitious what I tried to do on Thursday. I'm not going to repeat everything I said, but focus on at least one manageable example today. And I didn't want to lose a bunch of time writing the homeworks on the board, so today, your homework, I picked 3 problems from the book. You'll notice it's section 5 of chapter 14. If you haven't been reading chapter 14, you should be, obviously. Right? I know not everything I do is like in the book, but there is a great deal of overlap. If you have the 7th edition and you're worried that the problems are not exactly the same as the 8th edition, send me an email. I'll email you a picture of the problems I have in my book and make sure it's the same. Okay. What else is happening? So then later this week we'll be finishing off the topics I wanted to finish off before spring break. Are also covered very well in the book. Chapter 14. And when we get to day 28, this is Tuesday after spring break, so the second class day after spring break. So that would be March 15th. That is when the next batch of homework will be due. So if you can, start it early. I probably will be able to answer emails over spring break. If you don't want to work on homework over spring break, then try and get it done before spring break. Or you're going to have a bad time Monday night after spring break. Right? Let's see. Eraser. Okay, any questions? Data flow diagram here I cooked up that I thought would be manageable for us to dig into today. Right. Okay. So, again, doing the funny right to left thing. We're going to imagine we have some functions put together this way. Is z is a function of u and v called phi, and phi is a composite function. It's generated by f, and the first, and f takes two inputs. The first input is, I call it x in there. And it's a function of two variables, u and v, and the function is g. And then the second input to f I call y here. It's a function of just one variable, v. And the x and y are not strictly necessary. They're just kind of helper variables. So you can write the same thing in terms of helper variables or intermediate variables. Because there's only one variable there, so it's just like a regular calculus one differential in terms of one variable v.
Sir, can you see how you mean it? Again, like f is a function of g, or g is a function of u and v.
F is a function of two numbers x and y, which in turn are functions of other numbers, right? X depends on u and v, y depends on just v. And so you should,
It can be kind of delicate to actually say it correctly in a sentence. It depends on what you want to focus on. Z is a function of f and y. The function is f. X is a function of u and v. The function is g. Y is a function of v. The function is h. Or maybe you could say z depends on x and y according to f. X depends on u and v according to g. Y depends on v according to h.
Various late
letters in the alphabet, like u, v, x, y, z, are inputs or outputs. And then these earlier letters in the alphabet, but not quite at the beginning, these are functions that connect
inputs to outputs. Does that help? Yeah. Yes.
It's hard to describe all this stuff in complete sentences. You can also see what sort of complete sentences the book uses to describe it. You can get kind of long-winded with it.
I said sometimes if you know how to read it, I guess it's easier to relate it in your head.
Yeah. I certainly have ways of talking to myself about it. Yeah. These are all concepts. Some of that stuff overflows to you. So what are these total differentials I was going on about? dz is, according to that formula we talked about, like the tangent plane approximation. What does that say? So we're going to have the partial u times du plus the partial with respect to v times dv. One partial derivative, another partial derivative. And so these correspond to changes in u and v, or at least approximate changes in u and v. And this is an approximate change in z. This is a tangent plane approximation. I'm assuming, of course, that phi is differentiable, so that you can actually make a tangent plane approximation. So a polynomial or something nice like that. And then we think about z another way. Right? Instead of thinking of this big box that takes u and v as inputs and outputs z, we can think of this intermediate step where we get z from x and y. So that's another tangent plane approximation, but with different coordinate axes. Now you think of x and y as the inputs, right? Where you already did some work on u and v to get x and y. And then here there's this other intermediate step, x as a function of u and v. So the tangent plane approximation for that one would say, use this relationship g between u and v and x, and take the partial derivative with respect to u times a change in u, plus the partial derivative with respect to v times a change in v to get an approximate change in x. And fourth, here there's only one input to the function, so if you use the partial derivative notation, it's redundant and confusing. You could use it, but it just means the traditional calculus one derivative, right? Which you might like to write with the prime notation. So you have these four equations.
So what that means is, if you weren't given formulas for these functions, say, if you're just given some numerical parameters, like I'm looking at a particular point and particular u and v inputs, and there if I make such and such changes in u and v, what is the change in z? And you need some data to make an approximate answer. You need to know, okay, I need to know some of these partial derivatives, right? And I can answer lots of questions about this.
and there's a whole bunch of different things floating around here. There's five different letters, right? Five different variables that are changing. Variable letters. And then there's the three different functions letters, and they each have some derivatives. So to actually make it into a problem where you can solve the whole system of equations, you need an appropriate amount of data. Some stuff you can figure out without knowing all the du's and dv's, dx and dy. So, for example, what is partial phi if partial G partial V equals 5 and H prime equals 4 and then I tell you about the X partials or F partial, partial F partial X equals 2 and partial F partial Y equals 3. The idea is here maybe you don't even have a formula for this. Maybe this is all based on approximate data. And so you've estimated these partial derivatives by maybe looking at adjacent points, taking a difference quotient or something. So you don't have a formula, just some data. This is similar to one or two of these problems up here. Traction on this problem. So I didn't give you a du, a dv, a dx, or a dy. So you don't have enough numbers to literally make this all numbers and just solve purely numerical equations. It's not quite down to that level. It's so one higher level. It's like maybe when you were doing partial fractions in calculus 2, and you had two polynomials that are supposed to equal each other everywhere, and you had to make the constant terms equal, the linear terms equal, the quadratic terms equal. It's like that. Okay. So, on the one hand, you have equation 1 here that is, you can think of it as a polynomial, but a very nice polynomial, a linear polynomial function of du and dv. Right? And so it has a du coefficient, which we're trying to figure out, I didn't ask you to figure out, but it has a dv coefficient that we're trying to figure out. That's the one we want. So that's one thing. And then you can also take equations 2, 3, 4 and put them together and get another expression also in terms of du and dv. So you have these two polynomials. They're even nice and linear. Functions of du, dv. So
here's how we put together. So.
So that's equation 1. Think of it as a number times du, right? Plus a number times dv. That's a tangent plane for the phi function's graph. And this is equal to dz. But basically, I should say this equation is a tangent plane formula, essentially, once you unpack all the abbreviations. And then we think about it now in terms of x and y temporarily as a means of getting to our goal. And now we get rid of the dx and dy using equations 3 and 4 up here. And just substitute my formulas for dy or dx and dy on the other side there. So that's my far right equation here. And then on the far left, we have this total differential for t. And these equations are supposed to describe the same tangent plane, okay? And they're supposed to describe the same tangent plane. So you should be able to plug in any du and dv on here and get the same dz as if you plug in that du and dv over here. The only way that can work for all possible choices of du and dv is if the coefficients match. Okay, so we group this in terms of its du and dv coefficients. For du and dv, and you multiply them by the coefficients, as I'm calling them. So that multiple of dv has to be the same as this multiple here, dv. So these two things are equal. And so that's why I gave you these four pieces of data, right, when I asked you for partial phi, partial v, because this was the bare minimum amount of information that you would need to compute partial phi, partial v. It's just a matter of plugging the numbers. 2 times 5 plus negative 3 times 4. Negative 2. Any questions or comments about that? I should say that there's another way to solve the problem, which you may or may not like, compared to the algebraic method. I suspect some of you will like this better than the algebra, though. It's more of a pictorial way. Okay. So instead of going through all this algebra here, I could have made little annotations on my data flow diagram. This is a more visual way of thinking about it. I could have thought of, okay, there's a change in u, and it gets magnified by a partial I think I'll put them in the next board. I'm going to draw that same data flow diagram, but instead of thinking about inputs, I'm going to think about how do changes in the inputs flow. Okay, so starting at the left, going to G here, H, okay. And so I'm going to label those arrows with slopes, partial derivatives, right? This one is partial G, partial U. I didn't tell you what that was. You don't need to know to solve this particular problem. This one is partial G, partial V. And I gave you a number for that. That's 5. Okay. So you can think of, because there's the output here is, think of it as there's a change in X. Okay. And so this, think of this as the XV slope is 5, and the XU slope is some unknown number. So you're getting essentially the same algebra, but if you like, you can just, I'll leave off the heavy algebra, okay? So let me just show you why you might like using a picture here. And down here we have a YV slope, and the derivative here, the H prime, which was, what did I say it was? I said it was 4. Okay, 5, 4. And then these went into F, and the corresponding slopes were 2 and negative 3. And this finally went to Z. And so if you just trace through this diagram, you'll get the same results as we did through algebraic means. You want to ask, what are all the influences of, in this case, V on Z, right? It is the ZV slope. The minus sign is supposed to be there, but
I'm not sure what the best way to write this is.
How does V influence Z? Because remember, this whole thing was in one big phi box. And here's how the influence goes. So on the one hand, you're going to have a change in V. Think of it as getting magnified by 5. And then that gets magnified by 2. You're going along this path. 2 times 5. But V also influences Z along this path. And so it gets magnified by 4, and then it gets magnified and flipped by negative 3. So you just add those two slopes together, you get the total ZV slope, right?
So that's another way of thinking about the problem that may or may not be more enlightening than the algebra. But hopefully both approaches at least make sense. Does anybody want to ask a question or make a comment regarding these? What can we ask next?
With the beta flow method, sure. Another. So something's. Let me erase the front board then. Take a picture of it.
We'll ask a different question.
Another little diagram. And if you want, I can make up a name for this composite function. Call it P again. This time, let's say I ask, what is partial p, partial u, given the other numbers you need? That's supposed to be, that's a g there. That's clear. Okay. So you would need to know, to answer this question, you would need to know four numbers.
Right.
Right? Because there are two paths. No, you need to know five numbers, actually. There's two paths from u to z, right? There's this path, right? That's one way u influences z, and the other way is through this way. Okay? And as you go along these two paths of influence, there's slopes here and here, slopes here and here, and finally a slope there. Okay, so five slopes that you need to know. So I might tell you partial g and partial u, partial h, partial u. I could tell you one. H partial u is negative 1. Two. One is kind of less interesting. And I think something's missing there. We're missing a box.
What
about the dx, dy? And sorry about this, but I didn't label the function that makes y, did I? Right. So, there we go. Call it k. There we go. Now I've made more trouble for myself, right? Okay. Yeah. Well, you asked for another example, and I'm making one up. So, the first one went a little more smoothly because I already had that diagram prepared. All right. Okay.
Where are the five values that we need here?
We need more than five now. Okay, see? I'm going to need to know these two slopes. Mm-hmm. Then I'm going to need to know the slopes here, right? Mm-hmm. Then I'm going to need a slope here and a slope here. So I think that's six. Okay. Okay, so there's two paths of influence on Z. First, we go through G and H, and then we go through K here, right? So this function, right, think of it as, okay, we spit out these numbers S and T, they influence K. So I need to know the derivatives of that function, or at least I need to know the partial derivative at the relevant point where I'm figuring this all out. So six, 9, and then here I need to know the derivative of f with respect to this last piece. Oh,
no, it's just 5. Why does this is?
Of course, partial f partial y is. That will be 3. Okay. Just there's only one input to f, so that's just an f prime.
Okay.
Okay, so it's going to be 3. So in terms of this method here, I guess I would label like this. Okay, so the influence of u gets magnified by a factor of 2 right here, flipped by a factor of negative 1 right there. And then as we go along here, then we're looking at, because that tells us how a change in u will affect changes in s and t. So a change in s and a change in t, right, they'll get magnified by factors of 6 and 9. Right? Here. And then, and so those influences of u on y get magnified by a factor of 3 before it's finally all fed to z. So the answer is 3 times 6 times 2 plus 9 times negative 1. So I believe it works out to 9. So basically, the interpretation of this is, if I hold x constant and I hold v constant and I change u by a small amount, say 0.01 or whatever, then the change in z is approximately 0.09, 9 times as big. Right? And the reasoning is that given x and v held constant, the change in u...
I should write this down. This is starting to sound good.
So we're holding the other variables constant, and then we're making du 0.01. Right, then we're saying that going through it and through all the intermediate stages, the change in S is approximately given by this differential dS, which will be twice as big as dU. And then the change in T is approximately dT, which for a dV equals 0, so V held constant will be the opposite of du. And then you take the change in s approximated by the 0.2 and the change in t approximated by the negative 0.01, and you get an approximate change in y. So 6 times 0.02, so 0.112 plus 9 times negative 0.01. Negative 0.09 equals 0.03. And then finally, delta z is approximately given by this differential dz, which will be 3 times 0.03. So, I kind of like the data flow method. I mean, if I'm focusing, I can even imagine these data flows in my head sometimes, right? Let's write down a formula. What would this look like if I left out all the intermediate letters? You know, no y, no s, no t. What would this look like? So z would be a function of three things, x, u, and v. Right? And that function was built up from four intermediate functions. We applied f to an output of k. Right? And the output of k was computed from an output of g and an output of h. And g depended on x, u, and v. H only depended on V. And I think I got all the parentheses to match. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you might be able, given all these numbers, you might be able to play this diagram out in your mind. Or you could kind of do it incrementally like this. You could make up variable names, you know, for the G output and H output, right? and recognize G output will be twice as big as, or G output change will be twice as big as U change. H output change will be twice, it will be the opposite of U change, approximately. That gets you this far. And then you say, okay, well now the K output depends on the G output and the H output, so I have to take, you know, this and this, right, and multiply them by the 6 and 9 slopes up here, right? And then I have to do the arithmetic on that. And then finally, right, I take the K output, and since the slope of F is 3 at whatever point we're looking at here, I have to multiply the change in K output by 3 to get an approximate change in the F output, which is finally Z.
So this way can be maybe easier than doing all of the total differentials and having to collect the like terms. Because with this way, I was able to completely avoid the irrelevant terms. Like in this way here, you'll notice that I had some stuff I never used, right? Namely this, du term here, which never contributed to my answer in the end, right? Because I only asked for the one partial, you know, partial phi, partial v down here. So if you can sort of tell by thinking about it what terms of the total differential like this you don't need, then you don't have to write them down. You could also use the diagram to make to make it clear what the formula should be for the total differentials if you wanted them. But let's see. We're getting about to quitting time. Any other questions? Section 5 of chapter 14 has more examples of all this stuff. Some of you have already read them. The rest of you probably should too. This is day 23, right? So, okay. So this homework will be due Tuesday after spring break.
Okay, I think we're done.
If you need to pick up a homework or an old homework or an old test, come up and see me.